We're doing the Sefer HaMidot. We're up to page Kuf Tzadi. And the Magen Midvina had stressed that force of habit makes a person dissatisfied with what he has. Doesn't matter how much he has. And he said that the things that we appreciate are the things that we feel are unique, the things that we feel are special. And it's all in the eye of the beholder. He said it even applies to our best friends. Even someone who you value a lot, if you see him too often, you get tired of them. Chazal say that about husbands and wives. That's what the Gemara Nida says, that's why Hashem made it that they have to separate for 2 weeks a month. So that way, then the 2 weeks, the husband gets excited again. There are little tidbits of advice that the older generations used to give the younger generations. So it used to be common that the mothers used to tell the daughters, be careful. As much as you think he likes you, if you talk too much, he'll get tired of you. Make your speech precious in his eyes. They stopped telling the daughters that about 100 years ago. But so don't expect your wife to know that. But there is such a quote. There used to be such a saying that there's a list of pieces of advice that traditionally mothers would give their daughters, and this is one of them. That if you make your speech so common to him, he's not going to be interested. At any rate, don't expect that, guys. That's you see, they had to say this advice. They never said they lived by it. The Sefer HaMidot continues and says, this is how everything works in this world. Whatever you have, once you get used to it, it's a given. You get tired of it. A guy, you know, people sometimes work for years to get the Machon Meir. And then they're here for a year, 2 years. They spent a long time wishing they could get here. And when they're finally here, you get tired of it. Suddenly, it's not as much fun. Ki chashivut osher eino kiim belev ani. Because when you value wealth, again, we're talking within a framework that a person has enough to eat. He has what he needs. So then the question of whether he's wealthy or not, that's in the eye of the beholder. So the poor man, in his mind, ooh, how good it must be to be wealthy. Bikanot kinato lemor. In his jealousy, he says, mitneni lo'uval me'umei sadeh atzlachato. I wish I could fly over his field of success. I wish I could have that. That's, to his mind, in his eye, that's something that's very worthwhile. Kedivrei Hamashal HaNiskal, just as the allegory we said earlier, ki ani roe tnei ha'osher v'hatzlacha rak merachok, because he sees it from a distance. From a distance, he thinks that's the life. That's great. Lo mikarov, but he doesn't really see it up close. V'im ken, hu etzlo katal ani roe b'boker al pnei ha'sadeh. It's like a person looks out over the field. He wakes up in the morning, he looks out and sees the dew over the field. From a distance, it seems like everything's glistening. Look at how beautiful everything is. You come close, you don't see anything. You see a drop here, a drop there. It looked so beautiful. It looked like there was a carpet of gems all across the field. Now you come, you look close, little droplets, what's there? The same applies to the success of the wealthy. The poor man who stands at a distance, he looks at it and he says, wow, that must be great. But the wealthy person who's there, ask him, what does he see? I'll tell you what he'll tell you. What he sees is a balloon filled with air. There's a lot of air, a lot of fluff. I could tell you, when I was a kid, there were a lot of things that we wanted to eat as kids. A good example of this would be, you have ice cream, and then you have the whipped cream on top. So as a kid, you always wish you could get away with taking a finger and just doing that and having your whipped cream, right? And then when you get old enough, there's always that time when you're like an adult. Now I'm going to do this. No one's going to tell me no. And suddenly, yuck, after like 2 bites, you feel like vomiting. That's like terrible. And it's not that your taste changed. It's that the child who can't have it, that's the most delicious thing in the world. to once you can have it, you suddenly say, that wasn't as delicious as I thought it would be. And there are stages where we all encounter this. He mentioned earlier, you have fun for the first month or two till it becomes habit. You guys, those of you who have a driver's license, for sure you remember this. Before you got your license, it was like, I'm going to have that license, I'm going to be able to do everything. And then the first month or two, you really had that excitement. And after 2 months, you start thinking, no big deal. Today it's been over a decade, I'm here without a license. So, I don't have a license in this country. In the United States, I do. Here, I don't. And it's amazing to me when I visit my parents. So there, I have a driver's license. So the first time I get behind the wheel of the car, I remind myself, wow, this is exciting. I could go wherever I want. You know, it's an exciting thing. But by the time I leave, I'm used to it already. You get used to things so fast. He says, from a distance, you look at it, and it seems like that's the greatest thing in the world. And when you get there, so then it's very short-lived. Very quickly, a person starts taking it for granted, and he doesn't have so much fun in his life. Ask the wealthy person, what do you see in your life? Halo ya'nev yomar, what he'll tell you is, nod nafuch v'tzel kikayon uwe. I see a balloon filled with hot air. I see a shadow. Yeah, everyone looks at it and thinks it's the real thing. It's but a shadow of a kikayon, of a tree that lasts a day. Because once a person is used to something, he thinks he's the same as the other guy. In his own mind, yeah, he's happy with what he has, but he's not. He doesn't want to lose what he has. But he doesn't walk around happy. Look, I'm so happy I have this. Just like none of us walk around so happy 2 years after we have a license. Or you guys, I assume you had the same experience. I remember all of 12th grade, I was telling myself, what's life going to be like after 12th grade? No more tests. No more obligations. I can do whatever I want, right? And it's so short-lived. You probably experienced it also with the summer vacations, where you tell yourself, "Oh, I'm gonna be able to do whatever I want for those 2 months." Yeah, the first 2 days it's fun, the first week it's fun, and after that it's like, what am I supposed to do with all this? That's why King Solomon said to a poor man, "What are you going to benefit? You're working so hard to become wealthy. Wealth is something that's pleasant so long as you don't have it. But once you have it and you're used to it, it becomes like nothing. Okay, so I haven't yet had $1 million in the bank. Not yet. I haven't given up on it, but haven't yet had $1 million, $2 million, $5 million. I haven't been there. But I've had different occasions to speak to people who do. And I remember the first time someone said this to me, I was still a kid. I was visiting a guy who, a distant relative, he had this huge mansion about the size of the new building, the new Machon Meir building, yeah. Maybe even bigger. We were talking, and he said to me, you know, sometimes I look at all of this and I ask myself, what do I need it for? I spent all these years working hard to build up the finances I have. And I look at it and I come home at night and I could say hello and hear an echo down my house. Hello, hello, hello. Is that what I needed it for? Where have I gotten to? I was still a teenager when he said it. I stood there just looking, like wondering. I was tempted to say, why don't we switch? You go to school, I'll try your house for 3 weeks. You know, as a teenager, it sounds like almost ludicrous. But the conversation stayed with me. And the Magen Midovna says, yeah, the first few days, weeks, months are exciting. Afterwards, you're used to it. And what's so exciting about it? You guys remember I told you the story about the helicopter? There's a philanthropist I know who every bar mitzvah he gives his kids something special. So about 7 years ago, one of his kids had a bar mitzvah. So he took all the kids on a helicopter ride all across the country. Then they get to ride a helicopter. Very good. The next kid becomes bar mitzvah. So his dad says, okay, we're going on a helicopter ride. And he says, no, that's boring. We did that already. So, yeah, you get used to something. So now what? You can take him to outer space? What are you going to do now? You know, that's the point that he keeps driving home. From a distance, you think it's so much fun. Once you're there and you get used to it, so then it's not any more fun than the other guy's good time. And quite contrary, the other guy could have a good time from little things. And this guy, he doesn't get excited over that. And he says, you could validate this. Just look at people who have tremendous wealth and look at how they live. Look, how often do they smile? How happy are they with life? And bottom line, you want to know what's behind it all? What's behind it all is that if you want something good in life, you're not going to find it in the material aspects of life. Yeah, you need to eat, you need to drink, you need heat, you need a roof over your head. That's true, you have basic needs. But you want the good life? The good life is not about gathering material things. That's not where you'll have success. Life over here, well, it's a series of challenges. You're going to have to contend with them. Our soul comes down to this world and it has to contend with the challenges of the world. It's not easy. You have to fight for parnasa. People think it's just going to work out. That's one of the biggest mistakes I hear here at Machon Meir. Things are going to work out. That's a mistake. Chazal tell us that parnasa is something you have to work on. The Gemara says there was a man who had a child and his wife died and he had nothing to feed the child. So the Gemara says Hashem made a miracle and he developed like a woman and he was able to nurse the child. He was a very pious man, so he developed like a woman and wow, he could feed the baby. The Gemara says a miracle. I don't know if it really happened, but that's the story the Gemara says. The Gemara says, look at how Hashem views parnasa. Hashem could have made a pile of gold coins appear in the corner of his house, and then he'd be able to go out and hire a wet nurse. Hashem didn't do that. It was easier, so to speak, in the eyes of heaven, to make him develop like a woman and feed the baby, than make a pile of gold appear in the corner of his house, now go hire a wet nurse. You see, in Shemayim, they say, parnasa is something you're going to have to fight for. You have no choice. The child's going to starve. You're a pious person. We'll help you out. But the way we help you out is not by making a pile of gold appear in the corner of your house. Parnasa is something Hashem decreed we have to work at. So people sometimes live through life and say, it's going to work. What do you mean it's going to work? Make it work. We were put here, says the Magen Miduvno, to contend, to traverse the hurdles, be able to deal with them. The world to come is a world that's all good. This is a world that there's a lot of difficulty and pain and we have to contend with it. And this goes back to the point with which he began the chapter. If you recall, he began with a very, very sad thought. He said, you will see more things that are imperfect than perfect. More things that are bad than good. Look at the world. You will see more things that are there that could hurt you than things that can benefit you. More things that can sadden you than can make you happy. More cause for sadness than happiness. He said, you look at the world. What's going on here? And he said, the key to it all is the realization that everything that's imperfect is there as potential for becoming perfect. It's all there as something we have to develop. We're here in this world to make the world a better place. To take the things that are imperfect and make them perfect. So, the good that we find in the world is a product of the contending with the bad, so to speak. Overcome it. Deal with it. A person has to pass through those trials and tribulations of this world, as Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said, Shalosh matanot tovot natan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. God gave us three good gifts. V'kulan lo natanan ed al-dei yisurin. And every one of them involves suffering. You're not going to get it for free, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai said. God gave you three good gifts. On the other hand, they're not freebies. They involve suffering. Torah, Eretz Yisrael, Olam Haba. Three things. Torah, the land of Israel, the world to come. He says, and that's really the fruit of the good of this world. Those three things, if you think about it, they're the rule of life. You want Torah, you want the way of life. It's not going to come easy. It's going to come through sacrifice. I don't want to wait 6 hours. There's a good cup of coffee on sale now. I ate my meat, but I want to eat my milk. Okay, wait. I don't want to guard my eyes when I'm online. This attracts me. This interests me. Yeah, Torah is a way of life. It doesn't come easy. Eretz Yisrael, go to this office, go to that office, go to this office, go to that office. Why'd you come here without the papers? But you told me I should come here. No. Go get the papers. I went to get the papers. They told me to come here. Go tell them that they should have given you the papers and then you could come here. I went and I told them and they said, you have to give me the papers. Yisuchem, go deal with it. Go deal with it. You came here to sign a contract without a deposit? I'm not signing the contract with you. But you told me I don't have to give you the deposit today. That was yesterday. This is today. You know, you guys are a bunch of, you guys probably heard this, filthy Americans, spoiled Americans, rich Americans. You guys probably have... Eretz Yisrael, it's the greatest thing in the world, but it doesn't come easy. Olam Haba, you want a world to come? You got to contend with the challenges of this world. And that's the rule of life. He says, you want what's really good. What's really good is not easy street. What's really good is things that are precious, that are cherished, that you have to work for. And we are trained consistently to opt for the route of with the least resistance. That's what we do all the time. And you're not going to get good out of that. You're not going to get happiness out of that. Happiness is when you're willing to contend with these challenges, overcome them, take something that's imperfect, make it perfect. The easy street is to pull out. Part of easy street is to shift the blame. If my responsibility is to make it work, then I got a lot of work to do. If I can say, it's that machon, it's the opan, it's the teachers, it's the government, it's the rabbi, it's the wife, it's the kids, it's the home, it's the job, it's the boss, it's all legitimate. What do you want from me? Come on. They don't respect my degree here. They don't speak my language here. They're all dishonest here. They have a different way of working things here. I could give you a million excuses. No one's saying they're not legitimate. That's exactly what he's saying. The world is not perfect. You're right. We won't say that we are perfect, but let's just imagine for a minute that we are. But part, if you want to become perfect, then perfection is, let me make things better. It's not about saying, I'm okay, look, I'll go somewhere else. No. Let's make it work. One of the great lessons that I learned in life is, I don't remember who it was. There was a guy who kept switching jobs. And every time he switched jobs, he'd have a reason why that employer was unfair, was unkind, didn't understand, was driving his business to the ground. He had a million reasons. And he could always explain to you why he was 100% right. And at some point, someone sat him down and said to him, maybe you're right on everyone, but if you've landed 7 jobs in 2 years, then you have to stop and say to yourself, even though things are imperfect, I have to make them work. I can't just say, well, they're not right. And that motto stayed with me because I encountered situations that were far from perfect. And I kept telling myself, I have to make it work, I have to make it work. I was once in a school where there was one teacher who was extremely vulgar. And I went to the head of the school and I said, I want to leave, I want you to give me permission not to attend his class. And he said, no. And I said, this is a religious school. And I'm embarrassed to even quote to you the level of vulgarity that goes on in that class, and it's the teacher's initiative, I don't think I should be forced to stay in that class. And he said to me, in life you will have to deal with things that are less than perfect. I'm not letting you out of that class, if and only so that to teach you that lesson, that when things are imperfect, you have to deal with it. You can't just walk out. Okay, needless to say, I wasn't too happy with him. And I swallowed it. But the lesson was right. The lesson was right. As far as the lesson in life, that's what Magen Dovna says. You're going to see that most of the world is not perfect. But you want happiness, then you have to contend and make it better. You can't just pull out and say, no, it's not good. Make it good. And this is the famous line that Rav Kook Zatzal said in Al Pilei Torah. You guys know, Machon Meir put it out in stickers, at Tzadikim HaTorim. The righteous Tzadikim. You guys know that line? Anyone know it by heart? Mitzvah Hashem, next class we'll begin with it. To that. Excellent question. So Rav Kook Zatzal said, HaTzadikim HaTorim, the pure righteous people, Einam kovelim al harisha, ela mosifim tzedek. They don't complain about wickedness, they add righteousness. Einam kovelim al kefira, they don't complain about those that deny Hashem's existence, ela mosifim emunam, but they add in their own belief. Einam kovelim al barut, they don't complain over ignorance, ela mosifim chokma, but they add wisdom to the world. Meaning you could stand and say, there's too much, people are too ignorant, there's too much wickedness, or you could get up and be active and say, okay, so I have to shift the balance. I will be more righteous. I will be wise. I will extend I will help there be more wisdom in the world. So the question was asked, what do we do about the spiritual boredom? Meaning, you come to the land of Israel and you get tired of it. You come to learn Torah and you get tired of it. And the truth is that on both those fronts, the Torah addressed it. The Torah says, "Asher anochi metzavecha hayom al levavecha." Why does it say, "Asher anochi metzavecha hayom"? These words that I command you today, we say it in Shema every day. So Chazal said, "Bechol yom yiyu veinecha kechadashim." Every day you should treat it as new. And the question is, how do you apply that? Same thing with bikurim. Igati ayom l'Hashem lokecha kivati el haaretz. I say to Hashem, "Thank you, Hashem. I just came here." So, first of all, you see that. The Torah took for granted it's going to happen in Torah and the land of Israel. You have two great gifts. You have to work hard for them. And at some point you get tired of them. So that's normal. There are different ways to overcome this. And maybe we'll start with a few. And then at a future date we have to come back to this. Number one is what the Gemara says, "Bechol yom yiyu veinecha kechadashim." Every day you should view it as new. We have to realize that part of what happens here is within our control. A person can get up in the morning and look across the bed and say, "I'm tired of waking up every morning and seeing that face." A person can get up in the morning and after he starts thinking that, saying to himself, "I'm so lucky. I'm so fortunate. I'm the luckiest man alive. I have a partner in my life. I have someone to work with." And then his mind starts playing games and saying, "Yeah, she yelled at you last night. She told you she doesn't." And the mind can start telling him why it's not good. Same thing with the land of Israel. Same thing with the Torah. But we have a choice. We can form our attitudes. It's not only about how it plays itself out. We decide. And I think that's point number one, where a person can make a conscious decision. It's a fresh day, and I'm going to view it freshly. I have a tip, which I don't know if I should say online. Um, People come in on Friday night. That's very often a very difficult time for the family. You think Friday night is beautiful, but Friday night comes in after Friday day. And Friday day, there's a lot of pressure. You do this, you do that. You do this, you do that. You didn't do this? What's wrong with you? Bada bip, bada boom, bada bang, and you enter Friday. I've gotten so many phone calls from women who say, our house is hell on earth on Friday, and I enter every Shabbos in tears. Goes both ways. So, I have a funny suggestion. The Gemara says in their days, this was also the case. I suggest to the husbands to go to a shul that they could, I don't know if I can say this online, but if you doze off during the rabbi's speech, I'm a rabbi of a community, people doze off in my speech, and I don't hold it against them, because I think that sometimes that break, you wake up refreshed, that 10-minute nap, you could walk into Shabbos a different person. And I suggest that if at all possible, if the women can grab a little nap, 5-10 minutes, but you wake up, you're starting fresh. So it's not nice to sleep in a rabbi's speech. And if possible, people should go to a side room and fall asleep. If they're in my shul, they could sleep in front of me. It's fine. I have no problem with it. I see it as something that's so important that people should be able to come rejuvenated. And very often after the quarrels that go on Friday, people don't even want to walk home Friday night. Like these couples say to me, I leave the door to shul. I'm telling myself, I wish I don't have to come back. She says he leaves the shul. I wish he wouldn't come back. Why couldn't he help me more? Why couldn't he have done all the work in the morning? Why couldn't he have done what I asked him to 2 days ago? Why does that have to be this pressure on Friday? If he'd have done what I asked him to, it wouldn't look this way. Yes, no, maybe so, whatever. There's always room for claims. But the truth is that this idea that Chazal taught us, approach it fresh, approach it as a gift, rejuvenate your attitude to it, that's very important. And I think we can see part of it. Do we have a seat over here? We say every day, Avat Olam Avtanu Hashem Lokenu, God, you've loved us in eternal love. And you taught us the Torah. V'ten b'ribeinu la'avin, la'askil, l'lishma, l'lmod, l'lamed, give it within our hearts to learn, to observe, to fulfill all the words of your Torah, be'ava, with love. See, we need all of those. We need to have it within our hearts. We need to have it within our hearts to do it with love. Enlighten us in the Torah and let us cling to the Torah. And let us have a single heart to love and fear your name. Can't take it for granted. Can't take any of these for granted. Look at how much love we ask for. This is a blessing that's all about love. This is a blessing where we ask Hashem, help us love you. Help us love your Torah. Doesn't go on autopilot. Bring us in peace. Let us walk with our heads high back to our land. What's this doing here? You're talking about Torah. You're talking about connection to Hashem. Just before you finish talking about Torah, and we're going to go back to... So I think that the bracha is not only about Torah, even though technically this was the original Birchas HaTorah. The bracha is about connection with Hashem. And Torah is a connection with Hashem. Loving Hashem is a connection with Hashem. And the land of Israel is a connection with Hashem. And that's the lead into Shema. And that's the conclusion of the bracha. V'kirtanu shimcha gadol lo'odot lecha uliyachetcha ba'ava. You brought us close to your name to thank you and recognize your singularity with love. And that, I think, is also part of it. If you can show appreciation, then you love. If you look at the Torah and you say, what do I have to get up for Shacharis for? What do I have to put on these tefillin for? What do I have to live a life that's constricted for? That attitude, and there's truth to it, then you're going to view it one way. But if you look at it and you say, I'm so lucky, and you show the lehodot, the appreciation, and the liyachid, you realize how unique it is. My appreciation for Torah grows every year, the more I see other ways of life. The older I get, the more I see the alternatives, the more appreciation I have for Torah. I have to tell you, I have more appreciation today than I did before, and it has nothing to do with how much Torah I know. It has to do with how much of life I've seen. So the more I see what's out there, the more I realize, hey, this is unique. This is a tremendous gift. That comes back full circle to the Magen Midovna. You want to have an appreciation, realize that it is unique. Remember, the Magen Midovna said, we appreciate, we are happy when we feel something's unique. You have one parent that gets on the bus with five kids and says, I don't know how I'm going to do this. This is ridiculous. This is terrible. How am I going to manage with five kids? They're all over and the bus is moving. You have another parent that gets on the bus and thinks to himself, I'm so lucky. I'm so rich. Wow. I have all these jewels around me. They're both right. There's no right or wrong. What's their approach going to be? And part of it is not just a general approach. It's lehodot, the appreciation for what's really there, and liyached, to realize this is singular. This isn't commonplace. Be it the Torah, be it Eretz Yisrael. But that requires active thought. And we are trained to be acted upon and to be inactive. The Torah trains us to be active. Meaning, people will tell you, I fell in love, I fell out of love. He made me happy, he made me upset. And the Torah tells us, no, you have a choice, to be happy or to be upset, to be in love or not to be in love. It's our choice. But that's diametrically opposed to what Western civilization trains us. Western civilization keeps telling you, get stimuli that will make you happy. And the Torah says, no, you be happy, and be happy with what you have. Ezu ashir asameach b'chelko, and it's up to you to be a sameach b'chelko. But that takes work. That means I'm going to wake up in the morning and I'm going to feel rotten. I'm going to put on my shoes that are still wet from yesterday's rain. I'm going to run out to work and I didn't get the shower. And I'm going to think, I'm annoyed. This is going to be a horrible day. And I'm going to tell myself, no, I'm not going to think that. This is going to be a great day. And in spite of the things that are irking me, I'm going to smile. But that takes work. But it's possible. And when we can leap over those hurdles, then we become a happy person. Because part of happiness is also the success in attaining self-control. And that's a point we'll develop as we go on, but that's another integral part of happiness. And that's one of the reasons why people aren't happy when they buy things to make them happy. Because part of what they're doing is they're saying, I don't have control. That'll make me happy. I'm not happy. My wife, if she were like that, would make me happy. My job, my money, my security. Then I have zero control. And as much as we believe Hashem is running the world, we also believe we have a responsibility and we have to take control. And once a person does really take control of himself, then a person really attains happiness. But that's a whole new point which we'll get to, Bezalel Hashem.